Gimel Sivan, Sunday the 12th of May, Rabbi Yossi Cohen, Megillas Rus.
So as we know, on Shavuos we read about Megillas Rus, the whole story from beginning to end. And just a few important nekudas I'd like to discuss to understand some of the deep ideas that lie behind this fantastic story. First of all, there are many reasons given why specifically we read Megillas Rus on Shavuos. The Yichus of David HaMelech, he was born on Shavuos, and other reasons. Some Sforim say actually that one of the reasons we read on Megillas Rus, read on Shavuos, is because on Shavuos we were given the Torah, and the story of Megillas Rus, Chazal say, is all about Gemilas Chasodim. Chazal tell us that Rus is not there to teach us dinim of Tumah and Tahara, it's not there to teach us dinim of Hetzah and Issa, it is there to teach us the tremendous reward that comes to someone that does Gemilas Chasodim. And seeing that on Shavuos we're given the Torah, and Gemilas Chasodim and the Torah are inseparable one from the other. In fact, the Maharal in one place points out that Torah and Gemilas Chasodim have the identical gematria. Each one of them is 611. Torah, Gemilas Chasodim go hand in hand, and therefore this story, which is all about the reward that someone gets for Gemilas Chasodim, is mentioned on Shavuos. The Torah is full of Gemilas Chasodim from beginning to end, and we also need to learn that Gemilas Chasodim itself needs to be full of Torah from beginning to end. It's not just about being sweet and kind and good to people. There's halachas regarding the mitzvah of Gemilas Chasodim. In fact, the Chofetz Chaim wrote this famous sefer, Avas Chesed, and in his Akdoma there, the Netziv writes that the greatness of this sefer is that the Chofetz Chaim teaches us that there's a Shulchan Aruch to Chesed as well. So Megillas Rus is all about Gemilas Chasodim, Kabbalas HaTorah is all about Torah. The two go hand in hand, they're inseparable. Another idea of why specifically we read it on Shavuos is because on Shavuos we were given the Torah, and the Torah is made up of Torah Shebiktav and Torah Shebaal Peh. And if you want to learn a story that screams the inseparable reality that Torah Shebiktav and Torah Shebaal Peh go hand in hand, the story of Megillas Rus teaches us this point. The story of Megillas Rus, Boyaz, Svasemis writes in one place, Boyaz, in him is tremendous energy, tremendous strength. He carried out this halacha of Moyavi, V'loy Moyavis, that the females are allowed to come to Kehal Hashem, something which was argued upon about for many, many years afterwards and during this episode. But Torah Shebaal Peh dictates that the females are allowed to marry into Kehal Hashem. Boyaz demonstrated tremendous emunah and acted upon this, and as we know, married Rus. So if you want to have a demonstration of how Torah Shebiktav and Torah Shebaal Peh are so inseparable, and there's a person who is willing to be moiser nefesh to do something which was, again, not very easy to carry out because of all the different arguments that went on around this particular halacha, but he knew that Torah Shebaal Peh dictates that the females are allowed to come to Kehal Hashem, and this demonstrates the tremendous emunah that he had in the world of Torah Shebaal Peh. So on Shavuos, which the whole date of Shavuos in fact is completely depends on Torah Shebaal Peh, we would never know when Shavuos was if not for Torah Shebaal Peh, because the Torah says that you start counting Yimachras HaShabbos, 50 days. Shabbos, as far as we're concerned, literally speaking, would have been, like the Tzedukim would have said, Bepashtus, it's Shabbos, the day after Yom Shishi, it's Shabbos. But Chazal tell us that Shabbos here means Pesach, Yimachras HaShabbos means second day Pesach, that's when we start counting Sfira. And if not for Torah Shebaal Peh, we would not know when Shavuos was. Shavuos is dictated according to when exactly 50 days elapsed from Machas HaShabbos, the second day of Pesach, which again shows us that the whole Matan Torah is dependent on the drashas of Chazal on Torah Shebaal Peh. In fact, here in Chutz Doritz, you read the Megillah on the second day, which also is the Rabbanon, again to illustrate this idea. So that's another reason why it's read specifically on Shavuos, to illustrate the tremendous emunah that one must have, that Torah Shebiktav and Torah Shebaal Peh are inseparable. Another idea of why we read it specifically on Shavuos is Shavuos is Kabbalah Satera. And we need to know how to accept the Torah, how to look at Torah mitzvahs. Rus the Sfarim say, besides, we'll see other reasons why she's called Rus, but the Sfarim points out the gematria of her name is 606. Those are the amounts of mitzvahs that she accepted upon herself as a Georis. She already had 7 mitzvahs of Bnei Noach, plus Rus now is 606. And the gematria of that name is not just telling you, just by the way she accepted those mitzvahs, this seems to be defining her very essence. Her very essence is Kabbalah's oil mitzvahs. And it's very interesting to note how she viewed mitzvahs generally. I heard once from a Miller, that when there was this conversation between Normie and Rus, as she was teaching her certain halachas of Geirus, certain halachas of Torah, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do. So the Gemara tells us that from what Rus said to Normie, we understand what Normie was saying to Rus. And the pasuk tells us, she said to her, this is towards the end of the first parak of Megillas Rus, Normie said to her that you are not allowed to walk out of Tchum Shabbos. One of the Isurim, you're not allowed to walk out of Tchum Shabbos, to which Rus replied, Ki el asher telchi eilech, where you go, I will go. She then told her that it's forbidden for a married woman to seclude herself in the room with another man. Yichud, I stress a married woman. At this time of Jewish history, a penuya, an unmarried woman, was allowed to seclude herself in the room with another man. The one who was masakin, that it applies to a non-married woman, was David HaMelech. The importance of realizing that is because later on here in the story, we do find Rus going in the middle of the night and laying at the feet of the god Lador in Boaz in the barn, which probably would be in Nisa Yichud. But at this point of history, she's stressing to herself, stressing to Rus that it is forbidden to seclude yourself in the room as a married woman with another man. To which Rus replies, Uva Sheh Tzolini Olin, how you sleep, I will sleep. Chazal add other things as well that she said, saying you're not allowed to go to Kirkasoyos and Tiatrois, which she replied, where you go, I will go. So he pointed out that Bechera, if Normie is telling her certain things she may not do, she should reply in the negative. You are not allowed to walk out of Tchum Shabbos. She should have said, well, I will not go where you will not go. If she says that you're not allowed to seclude yourself in the room with another man, she should have said, I will not sleep where you will not sleep. But notice, it's interesting enough, she actually said what she said in the positive. And as he pointed out, Rus is teaching us here that Torah and mitzvahs are not restrictions, they are directions. Meaning the Torah can say, don't do something, and we can look at it as basically being handcuffed and a pressurizing, you know, straitjacket kind of religion, a whole list of no-nos, I can't do this, I can't wear this, I can't see this, I can't see this. Rus didn't look at it like that. Rus was told, you're not allowed to walk out of Tchum Shabbos. The way she viewed that was, oh, thank you very much, now I know how I am supposed to go in life. She said to her, you're not allowed to seclude yourself in the room with another man. She saw that as a positive instruction, not a restriction, but a direction, that now I know how I am supposed to sleep in my life, how I'm supposed to live my life exactly. Bashetolini onin. In other words, she didn't look at it as a restriction, but as a direction. If the Torah tells me, don't do something, then if the Torah says, don't do it, then by not doing it, I'm doing something positive. I'm making myself a more refined and better person. This is how she viewed it. It's not restrictions, it's directions. In fact, the Mechilta says that there was different views of how it worked in Matan Torah. For example, the first view there says that, for example, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you have to sit in the sukkah on sukkahs. Klal Yisrael replied, hein, hein, yes, yes. You have to eat matzah on Pesach, hein, hein, yes, yes. You have to wear tefillin every single day, hein, hein, yes, yes. You're not allowed to wear shatnas. They responded, loy, loy, no, no. You mustn't eat basar v'chalav, loy, loy, no, no. Came along Rabbi Akiva, who always had this interesting, positive way of looking at everything. And he said, that's not how it went. It went like this. Because Baruch Hu said, you have to sit in the sukkah on sukkahs. To which they replied, hein, hein, yes, yes. Eat matzah on Pesach, hein, hein, yes, yes. Wear tefillin, hein, hein, yes, yes. You're not allowed to wear shatnas, hein, hein, yes, yes. You mustn't eat basar v'chalav, hein, hein, yes, yes. Even when it was a loisase, Klal Yisrael responded, hein, hein, because again, they viewed it as a positive thing and as a direction, not as something which was a restriction binding me and holding me down. Sometimes we look at mitzvah sometimes as that's what binding me down. The truth is, as I once heard from Moshe Shapiro, that it works the other way around. In Hebrew, when we say something is permitted, so we say it's mutter. When you say something's forbidden, so you say it's asa. Literally, mutter and asa are matir asurim, right? What's the bracha of matir asurim in the morning? So some of us learn, we're not talking about necessarily being imprisoned and being let out of prison, but we're talking about being imprisoned by the Eight Sahara, being bound by the Eight Sahara, his ropes that prevent us from doing what we really should be doing. So really, sometimes we look at something which is forbidden as something which is, you know, the thing that I want to do. But the truth is, realize when you do something you're not supposed to do, that's when you are asur. That's when you are bound in a place where you shouldn't be. And sometimes when I have to do a positive mitzvah, I look at it as overwhelmingly difficult, realize it's mutter. That is actually the freedom of your life. So again, the Rus Gematria 606 is illustrating not just that happens to be those the amount of mitzvahs she took upon herself, this is defining her very essence. She is the paradigm of how one should be mekabel mitzvahs. Now, one of the questions which is asked is why specifically does Rus, David, Mashiach all have to come from Moab? The number of answers to this, the Medrash HaNe'elam says that Moab has a certain achzorius in it. The nation Moab has a certain cruel streak in it. As we know, they didn't bring Lechem and Mayim to Klal Yisrael. They had many reasons to have a Koras HaTzov. They came from Loit. Avram saved Loit's life a number of times and made him a wealthy person. And the basic HaKoros HaTov should have been to bring them Lechem and Mayim. And that achzorius streak that lies in Moav, interestingly enough, needs to be in Malchus Beis David. That achzorius, that cruel streak, needs to be in Malchus Beis David. That when necessary, that cruel streak needs to be unleashed to mercilessly destroy the enemies of Hashem. We find David HaMelech doing that in Sefer Shmuel, and Mashiach ben David will be doing that at the end of days. Mercilessly eradicating from this world those that obstruct Malchus Shemaim, Amalek and the like. So that cruel streak, which again is something which in essence is not a very good thing usually, but when necessary it should be there to destroy the enemies of HaKadosh Baruch Hu without any rachmanis whatsoever. In fact, the very first time we come across a great grandson David in Sefer Shmuel, he's defined as Admoini im Yufei Naim. Admoini is the middle of Esav. It's a certain bloodthirsty, cruel streak that seemed to be apparent on the visage, on the external features of David HaMelech. However, Im Yufei Naim is that, as Chazal say, he only did what he did according to the Sanhedrin. The Einei Ha'edo, Yufei Naim, we're not talking about the beautiful eyes that he had physically, but the Einei Ha'edo directed him exactly when and when not to unleash the Achzorius. Other than that, he was Kule Rachmonus, Kule Chesed, which he showed to Klal Yisrael, etc. So that's the ultimate king, the Malvin there says. The ultimate king is someone who's first a king over himself, then he can be a king over the people. To be born on easy street with naturally sweet, nice middos is easy. But here he has the middle of Achzorius in his spiritual genes, but completely controlled, monitored, and when necessary, released to destroy the enemies of Hashem. That's one reason why she had to come from Moav, David came from Moav, etc. Another reason, I heard this from Ramesh Shapiro, Shlita. The Vilna Gaon brings down that Moav is Gematria 49. All the Memtes Shari Tumah are to be found in Moav, the most decayed, immoral society imaginable. Now the rule always is that in Lashon HaKodesh, there's a difference between a Melech and a Moishel. A Melech is somebody who was willingly accepted upon by the people, and a Moishel is a dictator. As we say in Maariv, U'malchusoi barotzoin kiblu aleim. Malchus is always barotzoin. Ki Lashem hamlucha u'moishel bagoyim. But when Mashiach will eventually come, then v'hoya Hashem lemelech, willingly he'll be accepted over the entire world. And the question is, how will Mashiach be able to do that? It's an incredible thing that he'll be able to literally make a metamorphosis in this world. That everyone in the world, the United Nations, every African tribe will willingly accept HaKadosh Baruch Hu over them. Where is this incredible revolution, the metamorphosis, going to come from? And it's going to be Barotzen. It's going to be V'yoyim HaKoyel Hashem Neshama Ba'apoy Hashem Elikei Yisrael Melech. Melech willingly accepts upon every human being in this world. How is that going to happen? Where does he get the spiritual energy from? Where does it lie in his spiritual genes? The answer is, he's called Mashiach ben David. David HaMelech himself made a metamorphosis in his life. We know that David HaMelech, whatever the sin was, Chazal say, Kol Omer, David Chot Eino Latzayah, but the whole 51st Perek of Tehillim is a long tshuva that he did for whatever the chet was, but on his madrega something happens. And David HaMelech made such a metamorphosis in his life after the story with Bathsheba, that the way the Pasuk and Chazal describe it is, Hekim Oyla Shol Tshuva. He raised the whole yoke of tshuva for the entire world. In other words, every person now has a greater connection to Hashem and a capability of being chozer b'tshuva more than ever before. The Radak actually in the 30th Perek of Tehillim, Mizmor Sheikh Hanukkah Sabayas David, which is the Perek of Tehillim David prepared for the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash, the Radak there writes, what has it got to do with the Beis HaMikdash, that particular Perek? And he writes there that David HaMelech, the irony of it all is that David HaMelech, with the story of Bathsheba, out of that story came Shlomo HaMelech, who built the Beis HaMikdash, which is a place where all sins are forgiven forever. So clearly you see that something happened from that story, which officially was apparently some sort of chet, but through the tshuva that took place after that, he managed to generate a place, create a place, through that very child born from that marriage, that all aveiros forever can be forgiven. Hekim oyla shel tshuva. And the whole theme of the Perek Mizmor Sheikh Hanukkah Sabayas David is he wants the world to know that this Beis HaMikdash that I built was built by someone who was a Baal Shuva, who raised the world to something that was never there before. Kidilisoni, Velesimachta Uvaili, Hashem Elokai Shivati Nechavatir Po'eini is going on the Refuas HaNefesh, etc. that he had from that experience. So David HaMelech created this tremendous metamorphosis in his life, and therefore it seems in the genes later on of Mashiach, he will be able to create the great revolution at the end of days. But where did David get it from? David HaMelech himself admits and says, Ani avdecha ben amosecha. I am your servant, the son of your maidservant. And amosecha is Rus. And this metamorphosis, this incredible story that occurred in Stei Moav, in the fields of Moav, Rus came from Moav, Begematria 49. Meaning, she lived in a place where she had 49 options of Tumah available to her all over, wherever she went, wherever she turned. In Stei Moav, she lived in a world where every option of Tumah was available. Had she, let's say, lived in a place where there would have been 30 options of Tumah available, and she would have said no to all 30 options and yes to Hashem and yes to the Torah, that would not be the ultimate declaration of Malchus, because there's still another 19 options of Tumah she never had. It has to be that she comes from Moav, Begematria 49, all options of Tumah are available to her, and she says no 49 times to every one of those options. And this was the ultimate revolution, personal revolution, a humble story. There's hardly even 10 people at any given point of this story. But in this humble place, Stei Moav, which the Kadmonim, by the way, point out, Stei Moav is Begematria Mashiach. If you want to find the traces of where it all began in Stei Moav, where she was alone, no one coerced, no one forced her, nothing. Willingly, she fought against all those 49 options of Tumah, and said no, willingly, and accepted the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Malchus herself. And therefore, from this unassuming story, this tremendous personal revolution in her life gave the spiritual energy to her descendant, David, to do what he did, which eventually gave the tremendous koyach to Mashiach to do mitzvah what he will do. And it's interesting to note, Chazal point this out, that if you look at Megillas Rus, the entire Megillas Rus, besides 8 psukim, Chazal discuss why there are 8 exceptions to this, but the entire Megillas Rus begins with the letter Vav. Every pasuk, every single pasuk besides 8, and Chazal say the reason why there's 8 exceptions is connected to the child that she wanted to have and come into a covenant, a bris with HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the 8th day, bris mila. But besides that, if you flick through the psukim of Megillas Rus, 85 psukim, begimachi boyaz, these are the amounts of psukim that every single one of them has a Vav. What does Vav symbolize? Vav symbolizes one of two things. Vav is the letter of Chibur, Vav HaChibur. Vav literally means a hook, a connection. And Vav also has the power of Vav HaHipuch, the Ma'apecha. So this story, this unassuming story, number one is the Vav HaChibur. It is the letter, it's the story that connects Bereishis Bara Elokim, the beginning of creation, to the very tafkid of creation, the days of Mashiach. Again, a humble story that takes place in the fields of Moav. But this humble story is the connector between Bereishis Bara Elokim, that's the Vav symbolically, that connects that beginning of the world to the final tafkid of the world. And at the same time, the Vav is the letter of Hippuch, the letter that symbolizes the tremendous revolution, the Mahapecha that's being taken place here, on a private scale in Ruth's own life, that would eventually affect her descendants, David, and eventually Mashiach. Besides that, the number 6, the Gevatchi of Vav, has a great significance in the story. Later on we find that the amount of pieces of barley that Boaz gave her when she eventually left the barn that night, Boaz gave her 6 pieces of barley. And Chazal say, why 6 pieces of barley? It's a remez to the fact that Mashiach will come from her, who is described with 6 tremendous praises, as the Navi Shai describes, to be Ruach Chochmo, Bino, Ruach Eitz, Gvura, Ruach Das, Yot Hashem. Rashi brings it there. That's also a Gematria 6. As if the whole way through we have Vav, 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 as here is coming the great individual that is described with all these 6 milas. So this is the inyan of why specifically this all has to happen from Moav. Moav, the Gematria 49, all the Memtet Shai Tumah are there, all the options of Tumah are there, and she willingly says no to everything and yes to Hashem. This was the metamorphosis that took place here in this story. Chazal tell us that my Rus, the name Rus, Chazal tell us, it's more in Brachas, that she's called Rus, she yotza mimena David, Omar Yechanon, David HaMelech, who saturated HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kav Yochel with his Shirois and his Hishbochus, he wrote Sefer Tehillim, which, interestingly, if you write the Milui of the word Tehillim, the Kadmonim point out, the Milui of the word Tehillim, together with the Koil, is the Gematria Rus. This is a Sefer which finds its origins in Rus. And it's interesting that if we look carefully, the Loshen Nekia, which is what the Sefer is all about, is something which is very carefully worked on by Rus herself. The fact that she came from Moav, which is infamous for its priestess, was something that apparently affected on her Madrega the way she spoke as well. We find that at the beginning of Perek Beis, she's called a Moavia, Vatayma Rus HaMoavia, which is alarming after the fact she was actually a Geiris at that point. But the Sforim tell us that she said to Normi, Vatayma Rus HaMoavia, Normi, Elcha no Asoda, please let me go to the field and I'll gather there Shibolim, Acha Ashem Tzachin Be'enov, behind someone in whose eyes I will find favor. Vatayma Lo Alechi Biti, and Normi said to her, go, my daughter. What was the problem there that she's called a Moavia? Rashi brings down in one place the difference between the word achar and acharei is achar means close behind, acharei is muflak, far behind. Obviously she had no immoral intentions, but the way she spoke was inappropriate for the future mother of Malchus. To say to Normi, I will go and gather grain, achar, close behind someone in whose eyes I'll find favor, was inappropriate. Interestingly enough, Normi's education in the world of Tznius was not to take a sledgehammer and bang her over the head. She said to her, Lechi biti, go my daughter, I trust you. Go please, as is appropriate for my daughter to go. Did Rus pick up on the message? Most definitely. The next pasuk says, Vatelech vatovoi vatelaket basode acharei hakoitzrim. Acharei, far behind. She picked up on the message and behaved appropriately. Later on we find again, it seems that she hasn't fully mastered, having eradicated any trace of Moavia from within her. Because later on we find that Boaz said to her, when he welcomed her so kindly into the field and told her to take whatever she wants, He told her in no uncertain terms that she should be tidbokun im na'aroisai. She should cling with the maidens, and if she needs anything, go to them, and if she's thirsty, she should go to the jugs that the na'arim drew from the well. But at the end of that period, it says that when she came back to her mother-in-law, she said to her, her mother-in-law asked her, where were you? She said, I was by Boaz. And then, Batseme Rus HaMoyovia. Moyovia? Again, the alarm's gone off. What exactly is Moyovia about her? Well, the Pasuk says, Gam ki oma elai. He actually said to me, she says to Naomi, Im ha na'orim ashalitid bokim. Im ha na'orim ashalitid bokim. Na'orim? He never said na'orim, he said na'orois. Naomi again says to her, Batseme Naomi a Rus Kalosa. Again, she apparently looked at her and believed in her as Rus Kalosa. Toiv biti, that's wonderful, my daughter. Kiseitzi im na'areisov. She puts her right, again, raising her rather than pushing her down, calling her na biti. And I think that's a wonderful idea, you should cling to the maidens. Did she pick up on the message? It says the next pasuk, Vatidbak b'na'areis boyaz. That's what she had dveikus to afterwards as well. And eventually, Rav Miller Zecher and Bracha pointed out that the final ultimate test is going to be, the litmus test is going to be, to place her into a situation of pritzus, and to see, can she hold on to tznius even in such an environment, like Yaakov Avinu. What was his ultimate test? His middah was emes. Let's put him in a situation of sheker, living with a liar and a thief like Lavan, who go red in the face every time he says the truth, and let's see whether or not he can hold on to emes even in a situation of sheker, which he did. Can you take the brachas from your father Yitzchak, which is really some sort of sheker, and hold on to emes even in a situation like that, which he did? Anoichi Esav b'chirecha, he held on to any thread of emes he could. The ultimate litmus test for Rus is going to be, coming from Moav, we need to test, has she managed to get rid of any trace of Moavia within her? The ultimate test will be, place her into a situation what appears to be like pritzus. This is not the classic shidduch scenario, sending a woman in the middle of the night to go down and lay at the feet of the God Hador with all these instructions. But amazingly, although she told her to go down like a robot, it's very interesting, I haven't got time to go on the Kriya Ksivs here, but she said to her, Barachat, you shall bathe yourself, or sacht, and anoint yourself, to samtsim lesayach olayich, v'yaradat hagoyrin. All the Kriya Ksiv here are very interesting, because it implies that v'yaradat hagoyrin is a Ksiv, v'yaradat is you should go down. But basically what Naomi is saying to Rus here is that you have to go down to the barn like a robot, no feelings, no emotions, no day of your own, and do exactly as you are told to do. And if you can go into that environment, which is not a classic situation, which has a certain, so to speak, shell of pretense to it, and do so with ultimate sneers, then you've proven you have no trace of Moyalvia within you at all. And amazingly, although she gave these strict instructions, basically telling her to behave like a robot, that you don't exist, which also explains the Kri Veloiksiv, she said back to Naomi, Kol Ashetomri Eilai Eeseh. The whole word Eilai, amazingly, is read, but is not written in the Megillah. In other words, you're saying to me, I don't exist. Fine, that's how I'll go down. And she does so, but amazingly, in the next pasuk it says, she went down to the Gurin, and then she did what her mother-in-law told her to do. Says Rashi, she switched the order. From her own initiative. She says, it's inappropriate for me to go dressed with my Shabbos clothes, anointed in such a way, as Rashi says, people that will meet me or see me, will accuse me of being a woman of ill repute. And it's inappropriate. On her own accord, she switched the order and went down first to the barn and then prepared herself in a more tzanua manner. By doing that, she proved that she is the worthy mother of Malchus. She has no longer any trace of any Moavia within her. And Chazal actually points out, when she suggested to Boaz, the way she phrased, basically asking him, will you marry me, was Vayomer, he said to her, Miot Vatomer, Onoichi Rus Amosecho. I am Rus, your maidservant. Uforasto chanofecho al amosecho. Uforasto chanofecho al amosecho, say Chazal, is a lush and nekiah. Chazal contrasts it to the way Eishes Potiphar spoke immorally. And again, you see clearly, at the end of all this, the lush and nekiah of Rus was something that was now very much part of her, and there is no more trace of any of this Moavia whatsoever. And this is ultimately proving that she has no trace of Moavia, and that she is worthy of being the mother of Malchus. So very quickly to finish off, 30 seconds, Chasam Sofer points out a beautiful thing. When did they get married? When was the chas in the days of Boaz and Rus? Well, we're told at the end of Perek Aleph, she arrived at the beginning of Ketzias Sa'irim, which is the second day Pesach, Tezai Nisan. The halach is a geyeris, a chalila, a woman who's taken into captivity, has to wait for 3 months, Yemei Avchana, before they can get married to determine who the father is. Well, if she got married on Tezai Nisan, so it's Tezai Iyar, Tezai Sivan, Tezai Tammuz. That night she went to Boaz. He did not marry her because it was Ploni Almoni who has the first rights. So he waited one extra day. In other words, she got married to Boaz on Shiva Asa B'Tammuz. Says the Chasam Sofer, Shiva Asa B'Tammuz is when Klal Yisrael's Chorbans begin, the Chorban Habayis began, the time of our bitter Golas. However, the Golas only began when HaKadosh Baruch Hu already was Makdim before Kodim Namaka, and the Shalsheles of Mashiach was set in place. And as we went into the Golas, we went so with the idea knowing that Be'ez HaShem, the Yeshua, is around the corner.